Good afternoon. I'm Jamila Erickson, here with today's Midday Interview. My guest today is Wiley Cash. He is a New York Times bestselling author. His debut novel was called A Land More Kind Than Home. He has a new novel that was just released called This Dark Road to Mercy. Wiley Cash will be at Pomegranate Books tonight at 7 o'clock, partnering with the Cape Fear Literacy Council to do a reading and sign some books. And he will be our guest at WHQR for Prologue next month. He'll be here on Monday, March 17th. So first of all, Wiley Cash, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Jamila.
Absolutely. Tell me, first of all, what was it like becoming a best-selling author with your very first book?
It was a huge surprise. when my book sold, I sold both books together. My agent did. My wife and I decided there would never be a moment better than when we found out both books had sold. That was going to be the peak. So everything else that happened that was good was either going to be on that line or below. But I got to tell you, I was leaving a book festival in Huntington, West Virginia. Had a 3-hour drive home back to Morgantown we were living, and the event in Huntington had had 6 people at it, and 4 of them were librarians, and one of them was a formal student, and the other one, I guess, was there by accident. And I was driving home. My book had been out a week, and I thought, what am I doing? This is such a disaster, and you know, nobody's come to my first event. And on the way home, my editor called me and said, "Hey, we made the New York Times the first week." And so, it kind of teaches you to never get too happy or get too sad, because you never know what's going to happen next. So you just have to do the work and roll with whatever comes your way.
Absolutely. And I'm sure in the publishing world, there is a lot of rejection. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of just who knows what's happening on any given day.
Yeah. And I think that I spent my life in creative writing workshops. So I've had a lot of rejection, but I've also had a lot of encouragement. And so nothing really gets to you. You can't. A friend of mine who's a great writer named Matt Bondurant said, "You can't love your words, but you can love your writing. You can love your work, but you can't love your words in particular." So if someone doesn't like your words, you kind of keep going.
Wow. I noticed something interesting when I read This Dark Road to Mercy. In your thank yous, there are all these people that you list that are part of your publishing team and your publicity team. And I thought, wow, this book feels like a homespun story. It's very accessible. It's very personal. But there's all these people involved to assist you to make sure that that story gets into a lot of people's hands.
Yeah, it's true. I was at the American Bookseller Association meeting this past year, and John Green, who's a YA author, was speaking. And he said, these books aren't ours. These books belong to everybody who brings them to market. And it's true. This book is mine when I'm sitting at my desk at home, my office, and I'm trying to crank it out and do the best work I can every day. But then once I hit send on the email and send it to my editor, it's not mine anymore. Everybody's tied to its success or its failure, in one way or another. So when a book does well or when a book even comes to market, I think it's important to kind of look back at everybody who had a hand in pushing it forward. And that's from production to marketing to publicity to design to editorial. It's staggering how many people are invested in a book success.
It's rather like watching a movie and seeing those credits that go on for 10, 20 minutes these days, and you think, well, yes, all of those illustrators and all of those people, those guys work on the computers, and everybody gets a credit, and it's kind of overwhelming, but that is what it takes to create something that powerful.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that whenever you're feeling like, look at what I've done, or or on the other hand, look at this failure that's mine. You're like, no, this failure is everybody's.
It's nice to spread around
the blame. Absolutely. Spread around the blame and the joy.
There you go.
But as many people as you can get excited about a project as you're working on, especially on the local level, which is why I love doing independent bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get an independent bookstore excited about your book, it's gonna have some kind of impact.
Right. Now, you have been touring since the book came out. It was released when?
January 28th.
All right.
Tuesday,
and you have been around, what are some of the locations you've most recently been to?
Well, the book is set in my hometown of Gastonia, North Carolina. So we were going to have the launch event there, but we had the snowpocalypse that night. And so we ended up having to move it at the last minute. So we still had a great turnout. But I've been in Charlotte, Asheville, where we had over 200 people at Malaprops. I've been in Raleigh last night, Chapel Hill a few days ago. I've been in Shelby, Waynesville.
Wow.
And then tonight I'm in Wilmington.
At
tomorrow
Pomegranate
night,
Books at 7 o'clock.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow night I'm in Southern Pines. And then Saturday I'm in Pittsburgh at McIntyre Books. And then after that I'm launched out into this great wide world.
You'll be starting some national book tour.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh. How about that? If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Wiley Cash, New York Times bestselling author of A Land More Kind Than Home, and his latest book, which just came out a week ago, This Dark Road to Mercy. Now, I want to spend the rest of our time together talking about this new book. Wiley, would you start us off with reading the beginning of the book for
us? Sure, yeah. This novel's about a washed-up minor league baseball player who kidnaps his two daughters from a foster home. And one of the narrators is his oldest daughter. She's 12. Her name's Easter Quilby, and this is how she opens the novel. Wade disappeared on us when I was 9 years old, and then he showed up out of nowhere the year I turned 12. By then, I'd spent nearly 3 years listening to Mom blame him for everything from the lights getting turned off to me and Ruby not having new shoes to wear to school. And by the time he came back, I'd already decided that he was the loser she'd always said he was. But it turns out he was much more than that. He was also a thief. And if I'd known what kind of people were looking for him, I never would have let him take me and my little sister out of Gastonia, North Carolina in the first place.
A great opening, and one of the things that one of my favorite kinds of novels is the one that is set up with different chapters or different sections of the book narrated by different major characters. So Easter does some of the storytelling, and also Wade, mm-hmm. her father, who's been absent for so long and suddenly shows up. And there are other characters that also take on chapters or sections.
Yeah, just like A Land More Kind Than Home, this novel also has three narrators. The first is Easter, who I just read from. She knows her dad's a total loser, but she really wishes he wasn't. Mm. The second narrator is the girl's court-appointed guardian ad litem. North Carolina has a really interesting system to protect children who go into social services. They're assigned both an attorney ad litem and a volunteer from the community. And these two people work in tandem to kind of shepherd them through the social services. So he's a narrator. He's an ex-police officer, an ex-detective. His own life's been touched by tragedy. And so when these girls go missing, he thinks if he can rescue them, he can rescue something about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And the third narrator is the villain. His name's Pruitt. He's a bounty hunter, and he's also an ex-baseball player. And the girl's father was a pitcher once upon a time who threw at Pruitt and blinded him in his right eye and ruined his career. And so these three voices come together to tell this novel.
And there are aspects of it. When I was reading it, I really became a bit afraid for the girls and for their father, for Wade, as Pruitt was stalking them throughout the novel. But what I came away with from the novel is that although there are thriller aspects to it and a lot of suspense for me as a reader, it seems like the main characters, aside from Pruitt, have a chance at redemption, have a chance at really making a change in their lives. Because although bad things have happened in the past and bad things sure seem to be happening in the present, maybe it could turn out all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think when I write, I try to start with really interesting characters, or I hope I start with really interesting characters who I believe in, who are complicated. And I like throwing more complications at their feet to see if they can step over them or stumble through them or try to get around them in one way or another. And then the plot kind of comes in. So I feel if I create these interesting characters I believe in and interesting things have happened to them, they'll intersect in one way or another. And so once I created Easter, I thought, well, why is she in foster care? Well, maybe her dad's left her. What's her dad's story? Well, maybe he played baseball. Maybe he played baseball for the Gastonia Rangers. And Sammy Sosa also played for the Gastonia Rangers when I was growing up. Well, maybe this novel's set in the summer of 1998. Well, why has the dad come back? You know, maybe he's done something that's got people looking for him. And so these things kind of hit in waves, and you kind of hope you can catch on and run with it as much as you can before those ideas leave you and you think.
Yeah, you know. You just got to ride the wave when it comes. Yeah. Oh,
sure.
Gosh. That's an interesting insight into your creative process and how it works, that you start with these characters. And I have to say, for those of you who are listening right now, the characters in the book are vivid, very different from each other, and yet most of them have a common humanity, so that I really cared about these people as I was reading the book. I was worried about them. I cared about them. I was excited for them when things looked better. And so starting with those vivid characters and then having the plot sort of show up as you're moving along through your writing process, I love that.
Thank you.
Now, there's one other character in the book, that's how I think of it, which is baseball, because baseball runs throughout the book and is sort of used in a way as a metaphor. Would you say that's
accurate? Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you know, this is set in the summer of 1998, which was the year of the home run race between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, and that really saved baseball. We're coming off the lockout, which really, you know, embittered longtime traditionalists against the sport. But the summer of 98 saved the game, and it also saved America in many ways, because we were a country racked with political scandal in the summer of 1998. But every night, regardless of our politics, we all sat down together and we watched these new American heroes hit home runs literally every other at bat. Mm. And now, 10, 15 years later, we realize we were being misled. These guys were not real American heroes. They were benefiting from a number of drugs and performance-enhancing, you know, things they were doing. Mm. But we decided at that time, even though their heads were getting larger, their feet were getting bigger, we decided to look the other way and believe they were these exemplary heroes. But we do that with our family so often, and the other direction. Easter and Ruby believe their dad is a loser because they've always been told to believe that. But maybe he's not. Maybe something redeeming is going to happen or could be allowed to happen or could be fostered in one way or another. And so I was thinking about this idea of being instead of seeming. And that's also the motto of the state of North Carolina, to be rather than to seem. And there was a lot of seeming in the summer of 1998, but this novel is about characters who are trying to be.
Wiley Cash, the author of This Dark Road to Mercy, his second novel that is out. You can meet Wiley Cash this evening. He'll be at Pomegranate Books at 7 o'clock, partnering with Cape Fear Literacy Council. He'll be doing a reading and signing some books, and he will be our guest for Prologue on March 17th here at WHQR. Wiley, thank you so much for taking time out of what sounds like a very busy time in your life to visit with us today.
Oh, thank you. This is a real treat.